Stay safe on the roads with Rain-X Vision Beam Wiper Blades. Now at Menards. For over 40 years, Rain-X has provided drivers with products to outsmart the elements. Their Vision Beam Wiper Blades are easy to install and are designed to provide a smooth, streak-free wipe every time. Save big money on all Rain-X products now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
My name is Sarah Branch. A few years ago, when I was 24 years old, I had left my home state of Utah and moved abroad to work as an English language teacher in Vietnam. Having just graduated BYU and earning my degree in teaching, I suddenly realized I needed so much more from my life. I always wanted to travel, embrace other cultures, and most of all, have memorial and life-changing experiences. Feeling trapped in my normal everyday life outside of Salt Lake City, where winters are cold and summers always far away, I decided I was no longer going to live the life that others had chosen for me, and instead choose my own path in life, a life of fulfillment and little regrets. Already attaining my degree in teaching, I realized if I gained a further ESL certification, teaching English as a second language, I could finally achieve my lifelong dream of traveling the world to faraway and exotic places, all the while working for a reasonable income. There were so many places I had dreamed of going, maybe somewhere in South Africa or Far East Asia. As long as the weather was warm and there was beautiful beaches for me to soak up the sun, I honestly did not mind. Scanning my finger over a map of the world, rotating from one hemisphere to the other, I eventually put my finger down on a narrow little country called Vietnam. This was by no means a random choice. I had always wanted to travel to Vietnam because I'm actually one quarter Vietnamese. Not that you could tell or anything. My hair is brown and my skin is rather fair. But I figured if I wanted to go where the sun was always shining and there was an endless supply of tropical beaches, Vietnam would be the perfect destination. Furthermore, I had finally got the chance to explore my heritage. Fortunately enough for me, it turned out Vietnam had a huge demand for English language teachers. They did prefer it if you were teaching in the country already, but after a few online interviews and some visa complications later, I packed up my things in Utah and moved across the world to the land of the Blue Dragon. I was relocated to a beautiful beach town in central Vietnam, right along the coast of the South China Sea. English teachers didn't really get to choose where in the country they would end up, but if I did have that option, I could not have picked a more perfect place. Because of the horrific turn this story will take, I cannot say where exactly it was in central Vietnam I lived, or even the name of the beach town I resided in, just because I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. This part of Vietnam is a truly beautiful place, and I don't want to discourage anyone from going there. So for the continuation of this story, I'm just going to refer to where I was as Central Vietnam. And as for the beach town where I made my living, I'm going to give it the pseudonym Binh Hoan Hien, which in Vietnamese roughly, but rather fittingly, translates to Sea of Promise. Binh Hoan Hien truly was the most perfect destination. It was a modest-sized coastal town, nestled inside of a tropical bay, with the whitest sands and clearest blue waters you could possibly dream of. The town itself was also spectacular. Most of the houses and buildings are painted a vibrant, sunny yellow, not only to look more inviting to tourists, but also to reflect the sun during the hottest months. For this reason, I originally wanted to give the town the nickname Trenmoifeng, Yellow Town. But I quickly realized how insensitive that pseudonym would have been. So, Sea of Promise it is. Alongside its bright, sunny buildings, Binhuihen had the most stunning Oriental and French colonial architecture, interspersed with many quality restaurants and coffee shops. The local cuisine is to die for. Not only is it healthy and delicious, but it's also surprisingly cheap. Like we're only talking 90 cents. You wouldn't believe how much different flavors of coffee Vietnam has. I mean, I went a whole 24 hours without even trying coffee, and since I've been here, I must have tried around 24 flavors. Another whimsy little aspect of this town is the many multicolored little plastic chairs that are dispersed everywhere. So whether it was dining on the local cuisine or trying my 22nd flavor of coffee, I would always find one of these chairs, a different color every time, sit down in the shade and just watch the world go by. I haven't even mentioned how much I loved my teaching job. My classes were the most adorable 7 and 8-year-olds, and my colleagues were so nice and welcoming. They never called me by my first name. Instead, my colleagues would always say Chawam or Chawamge, which basically means hello, little sister. When I wasn't teaching or grading papers, I spent most of my leisure time by the town's beach. And being the bored, vanilla person I am, I didn't really do much. Feeling the sun upon my skin while I observed the breathtaking scenery was more than enough. Either that or I was curled up in a good book. I was never the only foreigner on this beach. Binhuihen is a popular tourist destination, mostly Western backpackers and surfers. So if I wasn't turning pink beneath the sun or memorizing every little detail of the bay's geography, I would enviously spectate fellow travelers ride the waves. As much as I love Vietnam, as much as I love Binhuihen, what really spoils this place from being the perfect paradise is all the garbage pollution. I mean, it's just everywhere. There is garbage in the town, on the beach, and even in the ocean. And if it isn't the garbage that spoils everything, it certainly is all the rats, cockroaches, and other vermin brought with it. Binhuihen is such a unique place, and it honestly makes me feel so mad that no one does anything about it. Nevertheless, I still love it here. It will always be paradise to me. And if America was the promised land for Lehi and his descendants, then this was going to be my promised land. I had now been living in Binhuihen for 4 months, and although I had only 3 months left in my teaching contract, I still planned on staying in Vietnam, even if that meant leaving this region I had fallen in love with and relocating to another part of the country. Since I was going to stay, I decided I really needed to learn Vietnamese, as you'd be surprised how many few people there are in Vietnam who could speak any to no English. Although, most English teachers in Southeast Asia use their leisure time to travel, I rather boringly decided to spend most of my days at the same beach, sat amongst the sand while I studied and practiced what would hopefully become my second language. On one of those days, I must have been completely occupied in my own world, because when I looked up, I suddenly see someone standing over, talking down to me. I take off my headphones and, shading the sun from my eyes, I see a tall, late 20-something tourist wearing only swim shorts and cradling a surfboard beneath his arm. Having come in from the surf, he thought I had said something to him as he passed by, but when I told him I was speaking Vietnamese to myself, he didn't realize anyone could hear me. We both had a good laugh about it, and the guy introduced himself as Tyler. Like me, Tyler was American, and unsurprisingly, he was from California. He came to Vietnam for no other reason than to surf. Like I said, Tyler was this tall, very tanned guy, like he was the tannest guy I had ever seen. He had all these different tattoos he acquired from his travels, and long brown hair, which he regularly wore in a man bun. When I first saw him standing there, I was taken aback a little, because I almost mistook him as Jesus Christ. That's what he looked like. Tyler asked about what I was doing in Vietnam, and later in the conversation, he invites me to have a drink with him and his surfer buddies at the beach town bar. I was a little hesitant to say yes, only because I don't really drink alcohol, but Tyler seemed like a nice guy, so I agreed. Later that day, I met Tyler at the bar, and he introduces me to his three surfer friends. The first of Tyler's friends was Chris, who he knew from back home. Chris was kinda loud and a little obnoxious, but I suppose he was also funny. The other two friends were Brody and Haley, a couple from New Zealand. Tyler and Chris had met them while surfing in Australia, and ever since, the four of them had been traveling, or more accurately, surfing the world together. Over a few drinks, we all got to know each other a little bit better, and I told them what it's like to teach English in Vietnam. Curious as to how they were able to travel so much, I asked them what they were all doing for a living. Tyler said that they were all vloggers, bloggers, and general context creators, all the while traveling to a different country every other month. You wouldn't believe the number of places they've been to. Hawaii, Costa Rica, Sri Lanka, Bali, everywhere. They didn't see the value of staying in just one place and working a mental job when they could be living their best lives, all the while being their own bosses. It did make a lot of sense to me, and was not that unfamiliar to my reasoning for being in Vietnam. The four of them were only going to be in Binh Han Hen for a couple of more days, but when I told them I hadn't yet explored the rest of the country, they insisted that I tag along with them. I did come to Vietnam to travel, not just to stay in one place. The only problem was I didn't have anyone to do it with. But I guess now I did. They even invited me to go surfing with them the next day. Having never surfed a day in my life, I very nearly declined the offer. But coming all this way from cold and boring Utah, I knew that I had to embrace new and exciting opportunities whenever they arrived. By early next morning, and pushing through my first hangover, I had officially surfed my first ever wave. I was a little afraid I'd embarrassed myself, especially in front of Tyler, but after a few trials and errors, I thankfully gained the hang of it. Even though I was a newbie at surfing, I could not have been that bad, because as soon as I had surfed my first successful wave, Chris would not stop calling me Johnny Utah. Not that I knew what that meant. If I wasn't embarrassing myself on a board, I definitely was in my ignorance of the guy's casual movie quotes. For instance, whenever someone yelled out, "Charlie, don't surf!" all I could think was, "Who the heck is Charlie?" By that afternoon, we were all back at the bar, and I got to spend some girl time with Haley. She was so kind to me and seemed to take a genuine interest in my life, or maybe she was just grateful not to be the only girl in the group anymore. She did tell me that she thought Chris was extremely annoying, no matter where they were in the world, and even though Brody was the quiet, sensible type for the most part, She hated how he acted when he was around the guys. 5 beers later, and Brody was suddenly on his feet, doing some kind of native New Zealand war dance while Chris or Tyler vlogged. Although I was having a wonderful time with the four of them, anticipating all the places in Vietnam Haley said we were going to be going, in the corner of my eye, I kept seeing the same strange man staring over at us. I thought maybe we were being too loud and he wanted to say something, but the man was instead looking at all of us with intrigue. Well, 10 minutes later, this very same man comes up to us with 3 strangers behind him. Very casually, he asks if we're all having...
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Good time. We kind of awkwardly obliged the man. A fellow traveler like us, who although was probably in his early 30s, looked more like a middle-aged dad on vacation, in an overly large Hawaiian shirt as though to hide his stomach, and looking down at us through a pair of brainiac glasses. The strangers behind him were 2 other men and a young woman. One of the men was extremely hairy, with a beard almost as long as my own hair, while the other was very cleanly presented, short in height and holding a notepad. The young woman with them, who was not much older than myself, had a cool combination of dyed maroon hair and sleeve tattoos, although, rather oddly, she was wearing way too much clothing for this climate. After some brief pleasantries, the man in the Hawaiian shirt then says,
"I'm sorry to bother you folks, but I was wondering if we could ask you a few questions."
Introducing himself as Aaron, the man tells us that he and his friends are documentary filmmakers and were wanting to know what we knew about the local disappearances. Clueless as to what he was talking about, Aaron then sits down without invitation at our rather small table, then starts explaining to us that for the past 30 years, tourists in this area have been mysteriously going missing without a trace. First time they were hearing this, Tyler tells Aaron that they had only been in Binh Hun Hen for a couple of days. Since I was the one who had lived and worked in town, Haley asked me if I knew anything of the missing tourists, and when she does, Aaron turns his full attention on me. Answering his many questions, I told Aaron I only heard in passing that tourists have allegedly gone missing, but wasn't sure what to make of it. But while I'm telling him this, I notice the short guy behind him is writing everything I say down, word for word, before Aaron then asks me, with desperation in his voice,
"Well, have you at least heard of the local legends?"
Suddenly gaining an interest in what Aaron's telling us, Tyler, Chris, and Brody drunkenly inquire,
"Legends? What local legends?"
Taking another sip from his light beer, Aaron tells us that according to these legends, there are creatures lurking deep within the jungles and cave systems of the region, and for centuries, local farmers or fishermen have only seen glimpses of them. Feeling as though we were being told a scary bedtime story, Chris rather excitedly asks,
"Well, what do these creatures look like?"
Aaron says the legends abbreviate and there are so many claims to their appearances, but that they're always described as being humanoid. Whatever these creatures were, paranormal communities and investigators have linked these legends to the disappearances of the tourists. All five of us realized just how silly all this sounded, which Brody highlighted by saying,
"You don't actually believe this shit, do you?"
Without saying either yes or no, Aaron smirks at us before revealing there are actually similar legends and sightings all around Central Vietnam, even by American soldiers as far back as the Vietnam War.
"You really don't know about the cryptids of the Vietnam War?"
Aaron asks us, as though surprised we didn't. Further educating us on this whole mystery, Aaron claims that during the war, several platoons and individual soldiers who were deployed in the jungles came in contact with more than one type of creature.
"You never heard of the rock apes? The devil creatures of Quang Binh? The big yellows?"
If you were like us and never heard of these creatures either, apparently what the American soldiers encountered in the jungles was a group of small Bigfoot-like creatures that liked to throw rocks and some sort of lizard people that glowed a luminous yellow and lived deep within the cave systems. Feeling somewhat ridiculous just listening to this, Tyler rather mockingly comments,
"So, you're saying you believe the reason for all the tourists going missing is because of these Vietnamese Bigfoots and lizard people?"
Aaron and his friends must have received this ridicule a lot, because rather than being insulted, they looked somewhat amused.
"Well, that's why we're here," he says. "We're paranormal investigators and filmmakers, and as far as we know, no one has ever tried to solve the mystery of the Vietnam Triangle. We're in Bien Hun Hen to interview locals on what they know about the disappearances, and we'll follow any leads from there."
Although I thought this to all be a little kooky, I tried to show a little respect and interest in what these guys did for a living. But not Tyler, Chris, or Brody. They were clearly trying to have fun at Aaron's expense.
"So, what do the locals say? Is there a Vietnamese Loch Ness monster we haven't heard of?"
Like I said, Aaron was well acquainted with this kind of ridicule, because rather spontaneously he replies,
"Glad you asked,"
before gulping down the rest of his low-carb beer.
"According to a group of fishermen we interviewed yesterday, there's an unmapped trail that runs through the nearby jungles. Apparently, no one knows where this trail leads to, not even the locals do. And anyone who tries to find out for themselves are never seen or heard from again."
As amusing as we found these legends of ape creatures and lizard men, hearing there was a secret trail somewhere in the nearby jungles where tourists are said to vanish, even if this was a local legend, it was enough to unsettle all of us. Maybe there wasn't creatures abducting tourists in the jungles, but on an unmarked wilderness trail, anyone not familiar with the terrain could easily lose their way. Neither Tyler, Chris, Brody, or Haley had a comment for this. After all, they were fellow travelers. As fun as their lifestyle was, they knew the danger of venturing the more untamed corners of the world. The five of us just sat there silently, not really knowing what to say, as Aaron very contentedly mused over us.
"We're actually heading out tomorrow in search of the trail. We have directions and everything."
Aaron then pauses on us before he says,
"If you guys don't have any plans, why don't you come along? After all, what's the point of traveling if there ain't a little danger involved?"
Expecting someone in the group to tell him that we already had plans, Tyler, Chris, and Brody share a look to one another, and to mine and Haley's surprise, they then agreed. Haley obviously protested. She didn't want to go gallivanting around the jungle where a tourist supposedly vanished.
"Oh, come on, Hay. It'll be fun. Sarah, you'll come, won't you?" "Yeah, Johnny Utah wants to come, right?"
Haley stared at me, clearly desperate for me to take her side. I then glanced around the table to see so too was everyone else. Neither wanting to take sides or accept the invitation, all I could say was I didn't know what I wanted to do. Although Haley and the guys were divided on whether or not to accompany Aaron's expedition, it was ultimately left to the majority vote, and being too sheepish to protest, it now appeared our plans of traveling the country had changed to exploring the jungles of central Vietnam. Even though I really didn't want to go on this expedition, it could have been dangerous after all. I then reminded myself why I came to Vietnam in the first place. To have memorable and life-changing experiences. And I wasn't going to have any of that if I just said no when the opportunity arrived. Besides, tourists may have gone missing in the region, but the supposed legends of jungle-dwelling creatures were probably nothing more than just stories. I spent my whole life believing in stories that turned out not to be true, and I wasn't going to let that continue now. Later that night, while Brody and Haley spent some alone time, and Chris was with Aaron's friends smoking, you know what, Tyler invited me for a walk on the beach under the moonlight. Strolling barefoot along the beach, trying not to step on any garbage, Tyler asked me if I was really okay with tomorrow's plans, and that I shouldn't feel peer pressured into doing anything that I didn't really want to do. I told him that I was okay with it, and that it should be fun. "Don't worry," he said. "I'll keep an eye on you." I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but I kind of had a crush on Tyler. He was tall, handsome, and adventurous. If anything, he was the sort of person I wanted to be, traveling the world and meeting all kinds of people from all kinds of places. I was a little worried he'd find me boring, a small city girl whose only other travel story was a premature mission to Florida. Well, soon enough, I was going to have a whole new travel story. This travel story. We get up early the next morning, and meeting Aaron with his documentary crew, we each take separate taxis out of Binh Hang Hung. Following the cab in front of us, curving along a highway which cuts through the dense valley, Aaron's taxi suddenly pulls up on a curve where he and his team jump out of the beeping of angry motorcycle drivers. Flagging our taxi down, Aaron tells us that according to his directions, we have to cut through the valley here and head into the jungle. Although we really didn't know what was going to happen on this trip, we were just along for the ride after all, Aaron's plans was to hike through the jungle to find a mysterious trail, document whatever they could, and then move on to a group of cave systems where these creatures were supposed to lurk. Reaching our way down the slope of the valley, we follow along a narrow stream which acted as our temporary trail. Although this was Aaron's expedition, as soon as we started our hike through the jungle, Chris rather mockingly called out,
"All right, everyone, keep a lookout for lizard people, Bigfoot and Charlie."
Where again I thought to myself, "Who the heck is Charlie?" It was a fun little adventure, exploring through the trees, hearing all kinds of birds and insect life. One big problem with Vietnam is there is always mosquitoes everywhere, and surprise, surprise, the jungle was no different. I still had a hard time getting acquainted with the Vietnamese heat, but luckily, the hottest days of the year had come and gone. It was a rather cloudy day, but I figured if I got too hot in the jungle, I could potentially look forward to some much welcomed rain. Although I was very much enjoying myself, even with the heat and biting critters, Aaron's crew insisted on stopping every 10 minutes to document our journey. This was their expedition after all, so I guess we couldn't complain. I got to know Aaron's colleagues a little better. The two guys were Steve, the hairy guy, and Miles, the cameraman. They were nice enough guys, I guess. But what was kind of annoying was Miles would occasionally film me and the group, even though we weren't supposed to be in the documentary. The maroon-haired girl of their group was Sophia. The two of us got along really great, and we talked about what it was like for each other back home. Sophia was actually raised in the Appalachians in a family of all boys, and already knew how to use a firearm by the time she was 10. Even though we were completely different people, I really cared for her because, like me, she clearly didn't have the easiest of upbringings, as I noticed under her tattoos was a number of scars. A creepy little quirk she had was whenever we heard an unusual noise, she would rather casually say the same thing. If you see something, no you didn't. If you hear something, no you didn't. We had been hiking through the jungle for a few hours now, and there was still no sign of the mysterious trail. Aaron did say all we needed to do was continue heading northwest and we would eventually stumble upon it. But it was by now that our group was beginning to complain, as it appeared that we were making our way through a regular jungle that wasn't even unique enough to be put on a tourist map. What were we doing here? Why weren't we on our way to Hughes City or Ha Long Bay? These were the questions our group were beginning to ask, and although I didn't say it out loud, it was now what I was thinking. But as it turned out, we were wrong to complain so quickly. Because less than an hour later, ready to give up and turn around, we finally discovered.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Something. In the middle of the jungle, cutting through the dispersal of sparse trees, was a very thin and narrow outline of sorts. It was some kind of pathway, a trail. We had found it, covered in thick vegetation. Our group had almost walked completely by it, and if it wasn't for Haley stopping to tie her shoelaces, we may have still been searching. Clearly, no one had walked this pathway for a very long time, and for what reason, we don't know. But we did it. We had found the trail, and all we needed to do now was follow wherever it led us. I'm not even sure who was happier to have found the trail, Aaron and his colleagues, who reacted as though they had made an archaeological discovery, or us, just relieved this entire day was not for nothing. Anxious to continue along the trail before it got dark, we still had to wait patiently for Aaron's team. But because they were so busy filming their documentary, it quickly became too late in the day to continue. The sun in Vietnam usually sets around 6 p.m., but in the interior of the forest, it sets a lot sooner. Making camp that night, we all pitched our separate tents. I actually didn't own a tent, but Haley suggested we bunk together, like we were having our very own sleepover, which meant Brody rather unwillingly had to sleep with Chris. Although the night brought a boatload of bugs and strange noises, Tyler sparked up a campfire for us to make some s'mores and tell a few scary stories. I never really liked scary stories, and that night, although I was having a lot of fun, I really didn't care for the stories Aaron had to tell. Knowing I was from Utah, Aaron intentionally told the story of Skinwalker Ranch, and now I had more than one reason not to go back home. There were some stories shared that night I did enjoy, particularly the ones told by Tyler. Having traveled all over the world, Tyler acquired many adventures he was just itching to tell. For instance, when he was backpacking through Bolivian Amazon a few years ago, a boat had pulled up by the side of the river. Five rather shady men jumped out, and one of them walked right up to Tyler, holding a jar containing some kind of drink and a dozen dead snakes inside. This man offered a drink to Tyler, and when he asked what the drink was, the man replied it was only vodka, and that the dead snakes were just for flavor. Rather foolishly, Tyler accepted the drink, where only a half an hour later, he was throbbing white foam from the mouth. Thinking he had just been poisoned and was on the verge of death, the local guide and his group tells him,
"No worries, senor. It's just snake poison. You probably drank too much."
Well, the reason this stranger offered the drink to Tyler was because, funnily enough, if you drink vodka containing a little bit of snake venom, your body will eventually become immune to snake bites over time. Of all the stories Tyler told me, both the funny and idiotic, that one was definitely my favorite. Feeling exhausted from a long day of tropical hiking, I called it an early night. That and most of the group was smoking, you know what. Isn't the middle of the jungle the last place you should be doing that? Maybe that's how all those soldiers saw what they saw. There were no creatures here. They were just stoned, and not from rock-throwing apes. One minor criticism I have with Vietnam, aside from all the garbage, mosquitoes, and other vermin, was that the nights were so hot, I always found it incredibly hard to sleep. The heat was very intense that night, and even though I didn't believe there was any monsters in this jungle, when you sleep in the jungle in complete darkness, hearing all kinds of sounds, it's definitely enough to keep you awake. Early that next morning, I get out of mine and Haley's tent to stretch my legs. I was the only one up for the time being, and in the early hours of the jungle's dim daylight, I felt completely relaxed and at peace. Very zen, as some may say. Since I was the only one up, I thought it would be nice to make some breakfast for everyone. And so, going over to see what kind of food I could rummage out from one of the backpacks, I suddenly get this strange feeling of being watched. Listening to my instincts, I turn up from the backpack, and what I see in my line of sight, standing as clear as day in the middle of the jungle, I see another person. It was a young man, no older than myself. He was wearing pieces of torn olive green jungle clothing, camouflaged as green as the forest around him. Although he was too far away for me to make out his face, I saw on his left side was some kind of black charcoal substance trickling down from his left shoulder. Once my tired eyes better adjusted on this stranger standing only 50 feet away from me, I realized what the dark substance was. It was a horrific burnt mark, like he had been badly scorched. What's worse, I then noticed on the scorched side of his head, where his ear should have been, it was hollow. Although I hadn't picked it up at first, I then realized his tattered green clothes. They were not just jungle clothes. The clothes he was wearing, it was the same color of green American soldiers wore in Vietnam all the way back in the 60s. Telling myself I must be seeing things, I try and snap myself out of it. I rub my eyes extremely hard, and I even look away and back at him, assuming he would just disappear. But there he was, staring at me, and not knowing what to do or even what to say, I just continued to stare back at him, before he says to me words I will never forget. The young man says to me in clear, audible words,
"Careful, miss. Charlie's everywhere."
Only seconds after he said those words to me, in the blink of an eye, almost as soon as he appeared, the young man was gone. What just happened? What, did I just hallucinate? Was I just dreaming? There was no possible way I could have seen what I saw. He was like a ghost. Once it happened, I remember feeling completely numb all over my body. I couldn't feel my legs or the end of my fingers. I felt like I wanted to cry. But not because I was scared, but because I suddenly felt sad, and I didn't really know why. For the last few hours, I learned not to believe something unless you see it with your own eyes. But I didn't even really know what it was I saw. Although my first instinct was to tell someone, once the others were out of their tents, I chose to keep what happened to myself. I just don't want to face the ridicule for the others to look at me like I was insane. I didn't even tell Aaron or Sophia, and they believed every fairy tale under the sun. But I think everyone knew something was up with me. I mean, I was shaking. I couldn't even finish my breakfast. Haley said I looked extremely pale and wondered if I was sick. Although I was in good health, physically anyways, Haley and the others were worried. I really mustn't have looked good. Because fearing I may have contracted something from a mosquito bite, they were willing to ditch the expedition and take me back to Bin Hun Hen. Touched by how much they were looking out for me, I insisted I was fine and that it wasn't anything more than a stomach bug. After breakfast that morning, we packed up our tents and continued to follow along the trail. Everything was as usual as the day before. We kept following the trail and occasionally stopped to document and film. Even though I convinced myself what I'd saw must have been a hallucination, I could not stop replaying the words in my head. "Careful, Miss. Charlie's everywhere." There it was again. Charlie. Who is Charlie? Feeling like I needed to know, I asked Chris about what he meant. "Keep a lookout for Charlie?" Chris said in the Vietnam War movies he had watched, that's what the American soldiers always called the enemy. What if I wasn't hallucinating after all? Maybe what I had saw really was a ghost. The ghost of an American soldier who had died in the war and believing the enemy was still lurking in the jungle somewhere. He was trying to warn me. But what if he wasn't? What if tourists really had vanished here and there was some truth to the legends? What if it wasn't Charlie the young man was warning me about? Maybe what he meant by Charlie was something entirely different. Even as I contemplated all this, there was still a part of me that chose not to believe it, that somehow the jungle was playing tricks on me. I had always been a superstitious person. That's what happens when you grow up in the church. But why was it so hard for me to believe I saw a ghost? I finally had evidence of the supernatural right in front of me, and I was choosing not to believe it. "What was it?" Sophie said.
"If you see something, no you didn't. If you hear something, no you didn't."
Even so, the event that morning was still enough to spook me. Spook me enough that I was willing to heed the figment of my imagination's warning. Keeping in mind that tourists may well have gone missing here, I made sure to stay directly on the trail at all times, as though if I wandered out into the forest, I would be taken in an instant. What didn't help with this anxiety was that Tyler, Chris, and Brody, quickly becoming bored of all the stopping and starting, suddenly pulled out a football and started throwing it around amongst the jungle, zigzagging through the trees as though the trees were linebackers. They asked me and Haley to play with them, but with the words of caution given me that morning still fresh in my mind, I politely declined the offer and remained firmly on the trail. Although I still wasn't over what had happened, constantly replaying the words like a broken record in my head, thankfully, it seemed as though the rest of the day, nothing remotely as exciting was going to happen. But unfortunately, or more tragically, something did. By mid-afternoon, we had made progress further along the trail. The heat during the day was intense, but luckily by now, the skies above had blessed us with momentous rain. Seeping through the trees, we were spared from being soaked, and instead given a light shower to keep us cool. Yet again, Aaron and his crew stopped to film, and while they did, Tyler brought out the very same football and the three guys were back at playing their games. I can't tell you how many times someone hurled the ball through the forest only to hit a tree linebacker, whereafter they had to go forage for it amongst the tropical floor. Now finding a clearing off trail in which to play, Chris runs far ahead in anticipation of receiving the ball. I could still remember him shouting,
"Roddy, hit me up! Hit me!"
Roddy hurls the ball long and hard in Chris's direction, and facing the ball, all the while running further along the clearing, Chris stretches, catching the ball, and he just vanishes. 1 minute he was there, and the other, he was gone. Tyler and Roddy called out to him, but Chris doesn't answer. Me and Haley lead the trail towards them to see what had happened, when suddenly we hear Tyler scream,
"Chris!"
The sound of this initial scream still haunts me, because when we catch up to Brody and Tyler standing over something down in the clearing, we realize what had happened. What Tyler and Brody were standing over was a hole, a 6 feet deep hole in the ground. And in that hole was Chris. But we didn't just find Chris trapped inside of a hole, because it wasn't just a hole. It wasn't just a trap. It was a death trap. Chris was dead. In the hole with him was what had to be at least a dozen long and sharp rust-eaten metal spikes. We didn't even know if he was still alive at first, because he had landed face down. Face down onto the spikes. They were protruding from different parts of him. One had gone straight through his wrist, another out of his leg, and one straight through the right side of his ribcage. Honestly, Chris looked like he was crucified. Crucified face down. Once the initial
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus plans November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp.com today for 10% off your first month.
Shock had worn off. Tyler and Brody climbed very quickly but carefully down into the hole, trying to push their way through the metal spikes that repelled them from getting to Chris. But by the time that they do, it didn't take long for them or us to realize Chris wasn't breathing. One of the spikes had gone through his throat. For as long as I live, I will never be able to forget that image of looking down into the hole and seeing Chris's lifeless, impaled body just lying there on top of those spikes. It looked like someone had toppled over an idol of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ when he was on the cross. What made this whole situation far worse was that when Aaron, Sophie, Steve, and Miles catched up to us, instead of being grieved or even shocked, Miles leans over the trap hole and instantly begins to film. Tyler and Brody, upon seeing this, were furious. Carelessly clawing their way out of the hole, they yell and scream after him.
"What the hell do you think you're doing? Put that frickin' camera away! That's our friend!"
Climbing back onto the surface, Tyler and Brody try to grab Miles' camera from him, and when he wouldn't let it go, Tyler aggressively rips it from his hands. Coming to Miles' aid, Aaron shouts back at them,
"Leave him alone! This is a documentary!"
Without even a second thought, Brody hits Aaron square in the face, breaking his glasses and knocking him down. Even though we were both still in extreme shock, hyperventilating over what had just happened minutes earlier, me and Haley try our best to keep the peace. Haley dragging Brody away, while I basically threw myself in front of Tyler. Once all of the commotion had died down, Tyler announces to everyone,
"That's it, we're getting out of here."
And by we, he meant the four of us. Grabbing me protectively by the arm, Tyler pulls me away with him while Brody takes Haley, and we all head back towards the trail in the direction we came. Thinking I would never see Sophie or the others again, I then hear behind us,
"If you insist on going back, just watch out for the mines!"
Mines? Stopping in our tracks, Brody and Tyler turn to ask what the heck Aaron is talking about. 16% of Vietnam is still contaminated by landmines and other explosives. 600,000 at least. They could literally be anywhere. Even with a potentially broken nose, Aaron could not help himself when it came to educating and patronizing others.
"And you're only telling us this now?" said Tyler. "We're in the middle of the frickin' jungle. Why the hell didn't you say something before?" "Would you have come with us if we did? Besides, who comes to Vietnam and doesn't fact check all the dangers? I thought you were travelers."
It goes without saying, but we headed back without them. For Tyler, Brody, and even Haley, their feeling was if those four maniacs wanted to keep risking their lives for a stupid documentary, they could. We were getting out of here, and once we did, we would go straight to the authorities so they could go find and retrieve Chris's body. We had to leave him there. We had to leave him inside that trap. But we made sure he was fully covered and no scavengers could get to him. Once we did that, we were out of there. As much as we regretted this whole journey, we knew the worst part of everything was probably behind us, and that we couldn't take any responsibility for anything that had happened to Aaron's team. But I regret not asking Sophie to come with us, not making her come with us. Sophie was a good person. She didn't deserve to be caught up in all of this. None of us did. Hurriedly making our way back along the trail, I couldn't help but put the pieces together. In the same day an apparition warned me of the jungle's surrounding dangers, Chris tragically and unexpectedly fell to his death. Is that what the soldier's ghost was trying to tell me? Is that what he meant by Charlie? He wasn't warning me of the enemy. He was trying to warn me of the relics they had left. Aaron said there were still 600,000 explosives left in Vietnam from the war. Was it possible there were still traps out here too? I don't know. But what I do know was, although I chose not to believe in what I saw that morning, that it was just a hallucination, I still heeded the apparition's warning. Never once straying off the trail. And it more than likely saved my life. Then I remembered why we came here. We came here to find out what had happened to the missing tourists. Did they meet the same fate as Chris? Is that what really happened? They either stepped on a hidden landmine or fell to their deaths? Was that the cause of this whole mystery? The following day, we finally made our way out of the jungle and back to Binh Hung Hen. We told the authorities what had happened, and a full search and rescue team was undertaken to find Aaron's team. A bomb disposal unit was also sent out to find any further traps or explosives. Although they did find at least a dozen landmines and one further trap, what they didn't find was any evidence whatsoever for the missing tourists. No bodies. No clothing or any other personal items. As far as they were concerned, we were the first people to trek through that jungle for a very long time. But there's something else. The rescue team, who went out to save Aaron, Sophie, Steve, and Miles from an awful fate. They never found them. They never found anything. Whatever the Vietnam Triangle was, it had claimed them. To this day, I still can't help but feel an overwhelming guilt that we safely found our way out of there and they never did. I don't know what happened to the missing tourists. I don't know what happened to Sophie, Aaron, and the others. And I don't know if there really are creatures lurking deep within the jungles of Vietnam. And although I was left traumatized, forever haunted by the experience, whatever it was I saw in that jungle, I choose to believe it saved my life. And for that reason, I have fully renewed my faith. To this day, I'm still teaching English as a second language. I'm still traveling the world, making my way through one continent before moving on to the next. But for as long as I live, I will forever keep this testimony. Never again will I ever step inside of a jungle. Never again.